An hour it took McNubbin to drive to work, and the stink of the man with him all the way. What he did was listen to the audiobook of his wife reading History of the Man. She did it for him and no one else. Her love letter to him, her voice all soft and sexy. She made the recordings when they were early together, and still the words brought him back to those hot days when they were fit and young and carefree. He's got all his limbs, this huge metal man, and we know he's a man because he's got that too, stiff and long, halfway down his thigh, semi-erect and always that way, her voice all breathy. Three men, arms stretched, can only just touch fingers around one chin. You'd have to stand 60 men tall to reach his head if there weren't the steps winding around. His arms are crossed over his chest as if he is hugging himself, and one finger pokes out, admonishing us all to behave. The metal is copper-coloured, but not copper, some substance long since exhausted, the last of it melted to forge this giant. He's been here well beyond living memory, more than 1,000 years. It took 100 years to build him, section by section, the workmanship so perfect that if you ran your fingers over the joins, you could only feel a slight ridge. The first bodies went in while he was still being polished. The 11th broken girl was so fresh dead, McNubbin could feel the last of her pulse, he thought, could feel the blood flowing, although nothing else was there. He carried her up the 400 steps to the man's mouth, sad for her strength and future, love and all ahead of her, and later said to his workmates, "Where are they coming from, these broken girls?" They all had the required ID, the approvals, the medical proof of drug-free, yet none were local. Locals weren't flawed. These ones had skin blemishes, cloudy eyes. You could tell they hadn't taken bitters all their lives. Who was breaking them? Mostly, McNubbin didn't question who he carried up to the man's mouth. The only rule was that they had to carry the bodies to the man within 3 days. Sooner the better, freshest best. It was not their business who was who, not theirs to decide, although carriers were trained to smell the wrong ones, those too long dead or preserved or filled with drugs. They didn't go into the man. The 11th broken girl seemed to shift, and he imagined, as he sometimes did with the nice ones, that she was still alive. He imagined carrying her back down and keeping her safe in his small house, making her soup, and she would rub his feet for him with her thin, cold fingers. His wife wouldn't mind. Her fingers were old and tired and well past rubbing. McNubbin started carrying at 14, one of the youngest, and he was proud of that. He felt every step now, 32 years later, but still he climbed steadily. You had to take each step on its own merit. They were well maintained, serviced every single night, but even so, fluids dripped, thick and slippery. You had to watch your footing. A fall could break all your limbs, and had. McNubbin's brother had tripped over and fallen head-toe, to the ground. They had to scoop him up in order to carry him back to the top, and that was McNubbin's job. Much as it still gave him nightmares, it was no one else's place but his to tip his brother in. No one else's place to tell his widow too, and whisper it over the head of his tiny baby girl and tell lies to his son, 4 years old and not so bright. The girl's breasts pressed into his back as he carried her slung that way, and her thighs under his fingers felt both soft and firm. Step by step, he reached the top. The smell was far worse up there, and you had to be careful because your eyes might tear up and your head spin no matter how used to it you were. It was a chemical thing, they'd been told in training. You did not want to be dizzy at the top. His head was the only open part of him, and that hole, right at the top and angled for access, was big enough to take the bodies. His head tilted back in an angle that would hurt a real man, his mouth wide open. No teeth. More than once, fat men had been sliced in two to fit. Children slipped in easy, as if on a fun ride. Women bent more going in, and no one had the answer as to why. Quickly now, no longer enjoying the feel of the woman's body, McNubbin propped her against the metal head, reached over to the knife rack and selected his favourite, a medium-sized blade. He drew it quickly across her jugular, making sure she was dead before tipping her expertly into the mouth hole. It was a nightmare they all shared, the idea of ending up in the man still alive, so this final slash was another job the carriers had to do. Regardless of the cause of death, they slit the throats. He heard the broken girl fall, passing through the broad throat, onto the breastbone and thud into the chest area. He waited for a moment, his head tilted sideways, listening for the faint gurgle, the sound of shifting as she sank. He liked to hear it. It meant the job was complete.